Hare Krishna, welcome to our 7-day Bhagavad Gita course. We are on day 4. First day we had the introduction. Second day we discussed who is God. The third day we discussed who am I. And today we will be discussing another very important subject, the law of karma and the wheel of samsara. This topic is very important. It is very perplexing. Karmano ghanagatihi, because the intricacies of karma are so complex that even learned people get bewildered. Why is this happening to me? Why is so much suffering there in the world? Why are good people suffering? Why are bad people enjoying? So many baffling questions arise when we observe things in this world. It is very necessary to have a very deep understanding of the way this law of karma operates in this material world. Very briefly though, let us revise some of the concluding portions or the essential portions of the discussion yesterday. We saw one of the very strong arguments that Lord Krishna gives in favor of accepting the idea of reincarnation or rebirth is this very important shloka or verse. Dehi nosmin yatha dehe kaumaram yauvanam jara tatha dehantara praptir dhirastatra namuhyati. This means that the soul which is embodied, which is inside this body, is moving even in this life through different bodies. We call these different bodies as different stages of life: childhood, youth, old age, but actually they are different bodies altogether. And just as a soul is changing these different bodies in this life, similarly when this body becomes useless, it is not a proper place of residence for the soul anymore, then the soul leaves this body and accepts another body. Now we should note that the law of transmigration, of reincarnation, is not a Hindu idea as some people believe. It is a law of nature. The law of gravity doesn't act only upon a certain class of people. It acts uniformly, without discrimination, on everyone and everything in this world. Similarly, whether one is a Hindu or a Muslim or a Christian, an Indian or a Japanese or an American, whether one is of any caste, creed or community, the law of transmigration or reincarnation will act. Whether one believes it or not, whether one knows about it or not, the laws of nature will act. After all, these designations of nationality, caste, creed, religious faith, these are designations to the body, the material body, but they do not indicate the real person, the real I and the real you. The real person is residing within the body, that's the soul, and the soul has no other designation apart from being a part and parcel of Lord Krishna and being his devotee and servant. That's all. So therefore, the soul is transmigrating, going through these different bodies from time immemorial. We have no idea since when the soul has been undergoing this form of change of body. And it will go on till one attains the point of liberation. In this way, the history of the soul in this world is that the soul has been constantly changing bodies. At every moment the soul is changing bodies. And the history is, it takes one body and then another body, leaves that, takes another body. And this is called the wheel of sansar. Sansar means the world of birth and death. Why is it called a wheel? What does a wheel do? A wheel moves round and round. Similarly, the Atma goes round and round in this material world. It accepts one body in one kind of species, then goes to another species, and then another species, sometimes the same species, sometimes a higher or a lower species of life. It goes high to the higher planets, then comes down to the lower planets, then back to Earth, again up to the higher planets. This is called a Ferris wheel. Very close by from here, near the railway station, there is an open ground. And many times you see these fun fairs are organized over there. And you will see these huge giant wheels where people like to sit. They will sit there and goes round and round. So the wheel of sansar is something like that. Each stage of rotation of the wheel represents that the soul is taking birth in a particular kind of body, in a particular species. And it leaves that body in that species, goes to another body, another body, another body, and comes back eventually to that body or that species. In this way, the wheel has been going, turning, 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 turning from time immemorial. So this is our history in this world. And this one life, which we consider so important, of only 50 to 100 years, is simply one lifetime in millions and trillions of lives that we have had in this world. But still, because we do not remember the previous lives, we have no knowledge of what life we are going to accept in the future. Therefore, out of ignorance, we think this body, this life, this family, environment, job, business, body, everything is all in all. We have no conception of anything before this life or beyond this life, afterwards. So the Bhagavad Gita is educating us that the Atma is going to leave the body. One day we are all going to die. And we have to determine by our actions what kind of body we will take. It is not that always a human being will be reborn as a human being. He can accept any species of life. The Padma Purana explains that there are 84 lakh species of life. Jalajana valakshani. Jalaja. Jala means water, ja means that which takes birth. Aquatic creatures like fish. Navalakshani. There are 9 lakh species of aquatics in this world. Sthavara lakshavimshati. Sthavar. Sthavar means those living entities that don't move, immovable entities, like the trees and plants, etc. Lakshavinshati, that means 20 lakhs. Kramayaha udya sankhakaha. The reptiles, the insects and the worms, and there is 11 lakh of these species. Pakshinam dasalakshanam. The pakshis or the birds, there are 10 lakhs of them. Trinshal lakshani pashavaha. 30 lakh species of pashus, beasts, animals, four-legged animals. Chatur lakshani manushaha. And 4 lakh species of human beings. So these 84 lakh species are being, some samples are being shown here. You can see the bottom most are the aquatics, jalaja, of whom there are 9 lakh species. Jalajana valakshani, sthavara lakshavinshati, then slowly there are some plants and things like that which are stationary, which do not move. Kramayo rudra sankhyakaha. So those insects, reptiles, which are not very advanced, they are also shown here. And then there are the birds which are shown, which are 10 lakh in number. Above that are the beasts, 30 lakhs in number, above that, the human beings. Now you may note that here there are 4 lakh species of human beings. Now as far as modern science is concerned, it considers the human beings as one species. The tigers as one species. And each of the different animals is considered as one species, similarly with the birds and so on. But that is not how the Shastras define species. The Shastras define species according to the level of consciousness of that particular living entity. We are going to discuss a certain concept tomorrow when we discuss Prakriti. And that concept is called the concept of the gunas. Sattva guna, raja guna, tamo guna. They are 3 qualities that are present and all pervasive in this world. These 3 qualities define everything within this world. Everything in this world can be understood in terms of these 3 gunas. The sattva guna, raja guna, tamo guna, the mode of goodness, the mode of passion, the mode of ignorance. They influence every aspect of this creation, from the smallest to the largest. So according to how the living entities are under the influence of these 3 modes of nature, they are classified differently. We will see more about this tomorrow. But anyway, suffice it to say here that the classification varies because according to how we are under the influence of these 3 modes, the consciousness changes, it differs. Therefore, even amongst human beings, we find such a wide variety of human beings. And therefore, not all human beings are considered in the same category. There are those human beings who are almost like animals, at one extreme. There are those who eat other human beings. There are cannibals. There are people who eat dog meat. There are people who are absolutely have no idea of spiritual culture, who are evil, violent, crude. On the other extreme, there are people who are very spiritually advanced, very saintly. They represent another extreme of this spectrum. In between are a variety of other species or categories of human beings in different levels of consciousness. Now, it is important to note that the Atma moves in this way from lower species to higher species. It goes on. And this is also a kind of evolution. But this evolution is a different kind of evolution. In this evolution, the Atma is moving from body to body. Now the Atma is in one body, in one species. Thereafter it takes up another body. And so on, the cycle repeats. But the theory of evolution that we have briefly mentioned in our discussions yesterday and day before, as propounded by Charles Darwin, and which has a great following in the scientific world today, that kind of evolution is a different evolution. That evolution theory states that life has come from matter, and that once life began from the smallest molecules, the simplest living organisms were formed, which further reproduced, adapted to the environment, there were some further genetic mutations, and then more and more complex organisms were formed. And in this way, just by mutation and just by adaptation to the world around us, the environment around us, all the species of life that we know in this creation, they were created. And not only that, the apex of all of them is man. And all this has come about simply by one body or one species evolving into a higher level of species. So please note, the evolution theory as per Charles Darwin and as this modern science propagates is that it is not that the soul is moving from body to body, but rather that the body itself is changing and evolving. So the modern evolution theory says that one species that is lower evolves and becomes a higher species. And in this way, lowest organisms became more and more complex, advanced organisms. Then ultimately there came the ape-like creatures, and from the apes, then humanity has come. As we know it today, the Homo sapiens sapiens. In technical language, this our modern day human beings are called Homo sapiens sapiens. So this body that we see today is a product of the evolution of the body earlier that was there in different creatures. But actually this is not a very tenable argument. Today we do not have sufficient time to discuss this particular theory and its merits and demerits in detail. But suffice it to say that let us use one or two points of common sense. We do not have any experience of any species reproducing and producing another species that is higher than itself. For example, we do not find two reptiles mating and producing a mammal. We do not find two animals mating and forming a human being. When two human beings mate, they will form only a human being. If we are to produce a higher species, it is not possible to produce from a lower species. And the second point is that if the lower species, the physical body of the lower species, were actually to have evolved into a higher species, then the lower species should not have been existing. They should all have become extinct. But we find today that all the species are coexisting. Some that were supposedly there may not be there today, but surely the apes are there, the monkeys are there, and side by side the humans were supposed to have evolved from the monkeys, they are also there. So how is that possible? Also, much of the evidence, so-called evidence that is cited in favor of the Darwinian evolution theory, it comes from the rocks. It is called the fossil evidence. There is a lot of literature available, a great deal of literature available, even in scientific circles, that demonstrate very clearly that there is a lot of evidence that contradicts the evolution theory. The evolution theory cannot explain these phenomena. For example, evolution theory states that modern man as we know him should have appeared in this form only a certain time ago, about 30,000 years ago, and before that there were other categories of people like Neanderthal man and so on and so forth. But archaeological evidence has revealed indications that man as he exists today also existed long, long time back. So how was that possible? It doesn't fit in with the evolution theory. But only those evidences which are corroborating or supporting the evolution theory are selected. Others are filtered out. And there are many books on this subject for those who are more interested and more scientifically inclined. So the point is that such theories are being propagated now, and false evolution theories are being propagated. But actually the real evolution theory is this, that the soul is moving through different species. All the species of life are simultaneously existing. All the 84 lakh species of life were created in this universe, of course in sequence, but around the same time, and they continue to coexist together, and they will do so till the end of the creation, till the end of the lifespan of the universe. So it is not that one species has evolved into another and once the other species into a higher species. That is not acceptable. But this kind of evolution, that is the reality. This is the evolution theory that is being explained in the Bhagavad Gita, not the false Darwinian evolution. So let us therefore see now and go further as to these 84 lakh species, do they exist only here on our planet, or do they exist everywhere? Our Shastra explains that life actually exists all over the universe. Modern science has not found, they say, evidence of life on other planets. But absence of evidence is not evidence of absence. Isn't it? Because I do not find something, it doesn't mean that that thing does not exist. It may mean that my instruments, my senses are so imperfect and defective that I am not powerful enough or capable enough of locating these things. Maybe those things I am looking for are existing in a different dimension. Maybe they are too subtle and I do not have the capacity to understand this. Life indeed exists everywhere in the universe. In the Bhagavad Gita, in the second chapter, when Lord Krishna defines the different qualities of the soul, he also uses one word to describe it. That is called sarvagataha. That means the soul is everywhere, all pervading. It doesn't mean that one soul is everywhere, but what it means is there are different souls spread out all over creation. The soul, by modern scientific research, or the living entities have been shown to exist even at the bottom of the ocean. I read some newspaper reports some years ago that they discovered that there were germs living even in fire. Inside fire, there were living beings living in the fire. Not that they were living outside in the heat, but inside the fire. Some kind of entities on earth. And medical science also says there are certain germs that do not get destroyed even when you boil the water. If we think that water will be 100% safe when you boil it, it may not be so. There are still some kinds of germs that may not be killed even at that temperature. So even on earth we have experience that living beings exist in atmospheres or situations in which we cannot possibly exist as human beings. So if this is possible here, why should it not logically be possible in other parts of the universe? According to the Shastra, in every planet there is life. In every planet there is different atmosphere. There is a different environment. And according to that environment, the Atma is given a suitable body that is meant for that environment. Just like on the earth, for those who are living under the sea, the fish, a certain kind of body is made. The fish gets its oxygen supply through a certain mechanism. The human being's oxygen supply is through another mechanism that doesn't work in the water. If we go and try to breathe through our nose under the water, then we will be in trouble. We will not last very long. So in this way, the fish's body, because it resides in the water, is designed according to that. Similarly, the bird's body, the animal's body who resides on the land. In the same way, in every situation, in every planet within the universe, there are different atmospheres in which different kinds of bodies are existing. Some are finer, some are gross. We discussed the other day, yesterday, that there is a gross body, which comprises Bhumi Apanalavayuh Kam Mano Buddhirevacha Ahankar Itiyamme Bhinna Prakritir Ashtadha. So these eight elements comprise the material body. And we also mentioned that our body, as we know it, is made mostly out of water and earth, that is solids and liquids, and 30% or 20% are the other things. But there could be bodies existing in other planets where earth and water are very small or perhaps very minimal, but fire element could be very predominant. Is it not possible? Why should we think that all material bodies should be made only of water and earth primarily? There could be bodies that are made out of fire, fiery bodies, and therefore they reside in the sun very comfortably. There is no problem for that kind of body in the sun. Whereas a fiery body cannot reside in the ocean. The body made of water cannot reside in the sun. But that doesn't mean there is no life in the sun. The Shastra says there is life even in the sun. There is life on the moon. The moon, in fact, is considered a heavenly planet. It is a planet that is attained when one performs a great deal of punya. Prapya punyakritam lokan ushitva shashvati samaha. In the sixth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna explains that planets like the moon are the punyakritam lokan, those lokas or those planets which are attained by people who have performed meritorious acts, punya, in this world. So therefore we should understand that living beings, life forms are existing everywhere. Now we have seen yesterday that the material body is like a dress for the Atma. This very important verse from chapter 2 illustrates this point. Vasansi jirnani yatha vihaya navani grihnati naro parani tatha sharirani vihaya jirnani anyani sanyati navani dehi. As we give up dresses when we come home and accept new dresses, the soul gives up the material body which is like a dress and accepts another dress. This we have seen yesterday, and this is another proof, another evidence for reincarnation. It goes to show that as the material body is shed by the Atma, it takes up another body, another dress. Now there are 84 lakh species. In other words, there are 84 lakh varieties of dresses available in this universe for the Atma. And the Atma can choose any particular dress. In other words, the Atma chooses what kind of body it wants to occupy. In what way does the Atma choose this? The Atma chooses by its activities, by its karma. By performing certain kinds of karma or activities, the Atma becomes eligible or deserves a certain kind of body. In this way, there are many, many bodies which we give up and then we accept new bodies. So this material world is like a garment shop in which 84 lakh varieties are available, and in each variety innumerable different samples or examples may be there. So we perform certain kind of karma, and then with that karma we purchase the body. Now when you go into a cloth shop, you look at a nice shirt and you may say, well, this shirt is 500 rupees, the other shirt is 100 rupees. If you can afford 500 rupees, then you will buy the 500 rupees shirt. But if you have only 100 rupees with you, even if you like the 500 rupees shirt, you can only buy a 100 rupees shirt. So the karma that we perform is the price that we pay to purchase a particular dress or body in this material world. So please try to remember this analogy. It's very useful, very simple. I will repeat the analogy once again. The material body is like a dress for the soul. There are 84 lakh species of life. So each species of life is like one variety of dress for the soul. Within each variety there are innumerable different samples. And by its karma, which is the price or the purchasing price that the Atma pays, it purchases different kinds of bodies. So this is the story of the Atma in the shop, the garment shop of the material world. Now the Atma has been here from time immemorial. It has been changing bodies, going one after the other. The Atma is actually meant for the spiritual world. It is not meant to be here in this material world. But somehow or the other, in forgetfulness of God, instead of leading a pure life, the living entity struggles. He commits sinful activities. He simply tries to enjoy this world and exploit its resources, forgetting that basically he is a spiritual being and he is meant for living in the spiritual world. Having forgotten his spiritual nature, he is here struggling against the stringent laws of material nature within this world, accepting one body, giving it up, accepting another body, giving that up, and so on, and struggling in this wheel of samsara. Every particular body is meant to cater to certain kinds of desires. For example, a tiger's body is very suitable for eating meat. A bear's body is very suitable for sleeping. The bear in the northern regions, the Arctic region, sleeps for as long as 6 months. So bear is famous because it can sleep for months together. Similarly, the monkey can engage in prolific sexual activities, which is impossible for human beings to do. So each species of life has its certain characteristic abilities and certain features and qualities, and there are certain kinds of material enjoyments that can be availed of in each of the different species of life. The kind of sleeping that a bear can do, the monkey cannot do. Similarly, the kind of food that the monkey eats, that cannot be had by the tiger. And the human being's speciality is God realization. The human body, the human form of life is especially meant for realizing God. But if the human being misuses this opportunity, doesn't use the human body for what it is meant, God realization, then that is a great tragedy. Then depending on what he uses his human body for, he will get that particular body in the next life. This is the law of karma. Material nature awards him a body that is suitable to his desires. Material nature says, oh, you want to eat meat? Then why not take the body of a tiger? I will give you a better body to eat meat. The human digestive system, the human body itself, even the dental system is not meant for eating meat. So I will give you a better body which is perfectly suited. So nature gives this entity, this who has a human body now, and who is performing activities that are not suitable for a human being, and he gives him a body that is perfectly suited for that activity, for eating meat. Similarly, if somebody is a glutton, he wants to go on eating indiscriminately, not wondering whether it is proper or improper, is the right time or not. So nature says, human being is meant for some discipline. It is meant for simple living, high thinking. But if you want to eat like a glutton, I will give you the body of a pig. And in this pig's body, there is no restriction for you. No question of sin, piety. You can eat whole day, whole night, eat anything you like, any garbage, no problem. It is all right for you. But for human being, yes, there is consideration of proper food, proper times, proper manner, everything. So here also we see some examples. A glutton gets the body of a pig. If someone engages in illicit activities, then why take the body of a human being? A human being is meant for living a decent, civilized life within the institution of marriage. When one performs all kinds of illicit activities, one might as well receive the body of an animal, which is better suited for such things, where there is no concept of shame and so on. It is explained that the trees, they don't have any clothes. They stand there out in the open, in the heat, in the cold, in the rains, at night, in the day. So those who like to expose their body, now we see all this happening more and more according to fashion. Nowadays, fashionable dressing means to expose the body more and more. Now, thanks to the influence of cinema, television, this modern Western style of dressing is encouraging people to more and more dress in a shameless way without any sense of decency, exposing the body. The animals are not supposed to have any sense of shame, but the human being is meant to have a sense of shame, and therefore hiding the body is important in basic culture. But a human being who decides to expose the body, nature says, why not take the body of a tree? Because as a tree, you will not be required to wear any clothes. You can stand there out in the open. In this way, nature analyzes each individual living entity's desires and activities, and in the next life awards him a suitable material body. that is just exactly appropriate for him or her to enjoy those particular desires. So now the question arises that when the soul has to be transferred to the next body, how does this transfer take place? In the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna gives an example in the 15th chapter. He explains that just as the aroma or the scent of a flower or anything else like good food, for example, it spreads and reaches distant places also. Similarly, the subtle Atma, which is inside the subtle body, is carried in a subtle way from the gross body to the womb of another mother through the semen of the father. In this way it moves like this aroma. We all have experience that we may be in a distant place in the next room, but when the food is being cooked in the kitchen, then we can smell it even in our room, because the aroma of that food is drifting through and coming into our room, enters our nostrils in a subtle way. So we are sensing the food through its aroma that is drifting to us. In the same way, the Atma is escorted, so to speak, by the subtle body. We saw yesterday that the material body has two divisions, the gross body and the subtle body. The gross body consists of earth, water, fire, air and ether, and the subtle body consists of mind, intelligence, ego. The subtle body acts as a vehicle for the soul at death. The gross body is destroyed, but the subtle body is not destroyed. The subtle body leaves the gross body at the time of death. It acts as a vehicle for the soul and takes the soul on to the next body. In this way we see, when the individual living entity is passing away, he is dying, it is a consciousness that he has at the time of death that determines exactly where he will go. In the Bhagavad Gita 8th chapter, Lord Krishna declares, Yam yam vapi smaran bhavam tyajatyante kalimvaram tam tam evaiti kaunteya sadatad bhava bhavitaha. He says, whatever is the state of mind or the consciousness of a living entity at the time of death, that state he will attain without fail, my dear Arjuna. So it is very important that we cultivate our consciousness in such a way that it will be divine, so that when we die, we will die with a divine consciousness. If we create an animalistic consciousness when we are living, then we will also have that same animalistic consciousness when we die, and then in the next life we will attain suitable forms of life. We are seeing here in this example, what is the difference between those above the table and below the table? Is there any difference? No difference. Only externally they look different. But soon those above the table will also become like those below the table when they die, because they have cultivated such an animalistic consciousness. So therefore, one who lives like an animal becomes an animal. So it is very important to understand, what is human consciousness? Human life is meant for divine pursuits, not simply for struggling to obtain animalistic pleasures in life, which are available even to all species of life. The human being, as we have seen earlier, is endowed with a very special quality of superior intelligence, which must be used for realizing God. Unfortunately, the human being is using this superior intelligence only for doing those things that the animals are doing, but in a more sophisticated, polished and complicated way. So we are seeing here, on the left there is a gross body, and then just behind it is a subtle body, just figuratively, diagrammatically shown. And then there is a Paramatma in the heart, and there is the Atma shown on the extreme right. Under the superintendence of the Paramatma, the subtle body takes away the soul to an appropriate destination. Karmana Daiva Netraena, the Bhagavata explains. And in this way, the subtle body carries the vehicle. According to the karma of that particular living entity, and according to the karma of the parents to be of that entity, by the arrangement under the superintendence of the Paramatma, the super soul, this particular soul, which is being carried by the subtle body, enters into the semen of a human man, if it is meant for a human species, if that is what its karma is, otherwise a suitable male in any other species of life, and then through that instrument into the womb of a mother, and once impregnated into the womb, then being nourished within the mother's womb, it develops a body further and further, and then gives birth, it becomes born. This is the way that the transmigration actually takes place. So we see that the principal thing that is important here is karma. This transfer is taking place according to what kinds of karma we have done in this life and in the previous lives. So let us therefore try to understand this law. What is the law of karma? Very simply put, the law of karma is that for every action, there is an appropriate reaction. You have seen, as students of science in your school, there is some kind of similar law. Isaac Newton's law, that for every action, there is an equal and opposite reaction. Of course, Newton intended that to be only for gross elements in this world. But the law of karma is much broader, much wider. It applies to all human activities. No one can perform anything that will not have a reaction. Every action must bring its reaction, sooner or later. Every cause has an effect, and every effect must have a cause. So not only will every action that we are doing now bring about a reaction in the future, but also we can understand by this logic that whatever is happening to us in our life now is a reaction to something that we have done in the past. Very simple logic. Action, reaction. Cause, effect. In this way, the law of karma means that nothing we do in life will be free from a reaction. So one has to be very cautious. As a human being, we must reflect before we perform any action. What kind of karma is it? What kind of reaction will it generate? Nowadays, a very popular philosophy is eat, drink, and be merry. Who has seen tomorrow? There was an atheistic philosopher many years ago, ancient times. His name was Charvak Muni. And he had a very famous slogan in which he said, Rinam kritva ghritam pibet, yava jivet sukham jivet, bhasmi bhutasya dehasya, kim punar agamano bhavet. He said, Rinam kritva, you take loan, you beg, you borrow, steal, do anything, but you eat ghee. Eat food that is cooked in ghee, very rich food. So ghee in the olden days was considered to be a sign of rich living, opulent living. Nowadays, of course, there is dalda and postman and other such things. But if one really wants to eat opulently, rich, nutritious food, then one should cook in pure cow's ghee. So eating food in pure cow's ghee is considered a standard of really good living, according to the ancient standards. So Charvak Muni says, live life, enjoy life. And in order to enjoy life, don't worry what is this sin, what is this piety. Yava jivet sukham jivet. So long as you live, you enjoy, be happy. Bhasmi dehasya bhutasya. Sooner or later this deha, bhasmi, it will become reduced to ashes. Kim punar agamano bhaved. Who knows what will happen after that death? Who says there is going to be a next life? Where is this question of punar janma? Everything is destroyed with the body. So don't worry about sin, about reactions in the next life. Just go ahead and enjoy life. But as we have seen, this is a very wrong philosophy to adopt. Adopting this kind of reckless attitude in life, people in the effort to enjoy do anything that their mind fancies. According to their whims and fancies, they act in life, thinking that they are free to do anything, little realizing that this so-called freedom that they are misusing now will actually be the cause of their bondage tomorrow. It will be the cause of their suffering tomorrow. Because every action will bring its reaction. The fact that we do not accept or we do not know that karma will bring its reaction or that there is a next life is not going to change anything. As we have seen at the beginning of this lecture, the laws of nature will act unavoidably on everyone. So therefore one must very carefully try to understand what kind of activities am I doing? It is proper? Is it proper? Is it improper? Will the reactions to the kind of activities I am doing now bring me happiness or will it bring me suffering? As a citizen of this country, for example, we may ask the question, what I am doing now, is it legal or illegal? And accordingly, a good citizen acts. He first of all has to understand what legal is and what is illegal. He must have some understanding of the law, of the land. And then he abides by the law and avoids illegal activities. This is a perfect citizen. Similarly, a perfect human being tries to understand the laws of God that are applicable for human activities. He avoids those activities that are against the laws of God, and he performs those activities that are meant to be performed by human beings under the instructions of God. So let us consider the different kinds of activities or karma that exist. Karma in general means any activity. So there is a general connotation of the word karma. However, as there is a specific connotation also of the word karma, and that means punya, pious activities. We will see the examples of these things. Next is vikarma, pap, sinful activity. And the third is akarma, spiritual activities that pertain to the relationship of the soul with the super soul, divine activities. So we have to be careful, whatever activities I am doing now, is it coming under karma, under vikarma or under akarma? But first of all, we should know what these three categories really mean. Let me give you some examples of punya. Giving charity, giving food to the poor. Here food is being distributed to the poor people. This is an example of punya karma. So it is materially very good activity. What is considered pious or good activity here, this is an example. Or for example, giving free medicines to the poor. This is also another example of punya, punya karma. So when one does punya karma, good karma, one gets some good material result. For example, someone is born as a king. Why someone is born as a king and someone is a pauper? Because that person has that stock of punya from previous life and therefore he has got. Why someone is suddenly propelled to prime ministership or kingship? Some punya is there. Unexpectedly out of the blue, something happens. What is the result? What is the reason for that? This happens as a result of past punya. Of course, it is not necessarily always the best thing in life to happen. tremendous suffering may be also there involved. But anyway, because of performing punya, some of the results one may get may be position, power, prestige, wealth, maybe beauty. Why somebody is very beautiful, somebody is not? Why is somebody very ugly? So beauty, physical beauty, is also the result of some past punya. So this is as far as punya is concerned. This is a materially good activity. By performing this, we get a materially good result. But it is still material. Let us consider vikarma or sin. Stealing, dacoity, raping, killing, these are examples of some sins. So naturally, all these bring bad results. Taking all forms of intoxication, drinking alcohol, taking drugs, these are all examples of sinful activity. Killing animals, and especially the cow. In the Vedic scripture, killing of animals is considered very sinful. One gets tremendous karmic reaction because of killing, taking life of animals. And particularly sinful is the killing of the cow, because the cow is considered the mother of all humanity. The cow is considered very sacred. The milk, the dung, the urine of the cow are all considered very precious and pure. The cow is the only animal whose waste products are considered very pure. So we can see here, as a result of karma, the man who is killing the cow, what do you see in his face? What do you see on the face? He has the face of the cow. And what is happening to the face of the cow? He has the man's face. What does this mean? It means that positions are going to be interchanged by the law of karma. Sooner or later, eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth. That person who is committing this sinful activity of killing a cow, himself will have to be killed and slaughtered in this very painful and horrible way sometime in the future. These are some examples of sinful activities. And what is the result of such sinful activities? Suffering. Somebody's house has collapsed. There is financial losses. These are some of the things that happen as a result of sin of the past. Or some very terrible disease like this. We can also understand such things to be the result of past sinful activity of previous lives. In this way, karma and vikarma both bring about respectively good or bad results. Pious activities, punya, brings material pleasure, material happiness. Sinful activities or pap bring distress, suffering, and so on. So now, let us discuss how both karma and vikarma are actually a cause of bondage in this world. Consider one man who is working very, very hard here. He works whole year in the office. The boss will be shouting at him. He has to work. Somehow he works hard. He earns his monthly salary. And then he says, now I will go on a vacation, enjoy myself. No boss to shout at me. I will simply enjoy life. I will spend money like anything. And then he goes, enjoys, enjoys, enjoys. For how long can he enjoy? Till the money lasts. He has earned the whole year. But whatever savings he has taken with him for enjoyment, the moment that gets over, he has to return to his office. And again, the same activities of the boss shouting at him will continue. In the same way, when one performs punya, material activities, the stock of punya increases sufficiently. One has to take birth again in order to receive the good reactions for this punya. One does not become free from the cycle of birth and death by performing punya. Rather, one is forced to take birth in a higher species of life, maybe even in the higher planets, like the heavenly planets. At an extreme case, one may even become Brahma, the creator. Even Brahma is an ordinary soul like you and me. But he has become extraordinary by performing extraordinary punya for many, many lifetimes. Similarly, some jiva could become Indra, the king of the devas. Somebody could become Vayu, Varuna, Surya, Chandra. They could become all these demigods by performance of punya. But eventually, what is the basis on which they have become that? That stock of punya. But as they live in the higher planets and experience the subtle, finer material delights of the higher planets, their stock of punya gets depleted. And finally, when the stock is completely depleted, what happens? Like that man who was working hard in the office, he went to the vacation, enjoyed. When his money was over, he had to come back to the same old place. Similarly, we perform punya. At the most, we can get elevated to the higher planets. And then we enjoy the fruits of that pious karma there for a long, long, long time. And after having done that, kshine punya marti lokam vishanti. When a punya becomes kshina, it is finished, then again vishanti marti lokam. Once again we return to this earthly planet. So that is how we see that punya, although it gives us good results materially, it still makes us take birth again. Let us see now pap. Take the example of a person who steals. He has performed a theft. He is caught by the police. He is put in the jail. Now as he stays in the jail, suppose the jail sentence is 5 years. With every year and every passing month that he spends in the jail, he is depleting the stock of his crime. Isn't it? The suffering that he is supposed to undergo because of that crime, that suffering is becoming diminished now with every passing day because he has only lesser time now to serve in the jail. So initially there's 5 years, then 4 years, 3 years, 2 years, 1 year. And finally when the 5 years are over, he's a free man. He's back again to where he was. So just like the earlier case, but in the opposite way. The man earned his money, he enjoyed. When the money was over, he came back to his original position. Similarly, somebody from his original position performed a crime. He is sent to jail. He suffered. When the period of suffering was over, he came back to his original position. So how does that affect us in terms of pap? When one performs a sin, say like here we are seeing a case of cooking meat or non-vegetarian foods, it is explained in the Shastra that one is sent to hellish planets in the next life, given an appropriate kind of subtle body, in which one is put into hot boiling oil oneself. Such descriptions are very elaborately given, not only in the Srimad Bhagavatam, but also in the other Puranas. These are not fictitious fairy tale stories, but they actually show what kind of punishments are awarded to sinful living entities. Take another case of someone who drinks alcohol, sells alcohol, encourages the drinking of alcohol. For him, he is made to drink molten iron in a suitable subtle body in some particular hellish planet, the Naraka Lokas. The Shastras explain that right at the bottom of this universe, there are various kinds of Naraka Lokas. We will have a brief description of that tomorrow. In these Naraka Lokas, the sinful living entity undergoes various types of sufferings according to the kind of sins and crimes that he has performed here. Nobody can escape. One of the demigods, Yamaraj, Yama, it is his department to keep track of our pap and punya. And when we die, the soul is taken to the abode of Yama, Yama Loka, and then our sentence is read out. Just like when an accused person is taken to the court analyzes the whole case and then gives a decision. Similarly, Yamaraj studies the biodata of this person. Okay, these are the punyas he has performed, these are the papas he has done, and accordingly, for these pap activities, sinful activities, he has to go to this particular hell for this much time, then to this particular hell for this much time. And then when most of the pap has been exhausted by this suffering, he will get born in some lower species on earth like this, like the snakes, the frogs, maybe the trees, insects, and then gradually work his way up to the human form of life. From the lower species to the higher species, there is automatic progression. No effort needs to be made by that insect or the animal to make progress to the higher species in the next life. It happens automatically by the laws of nature. But the human form of life is a junction. Because here, the living entity is endowed with superior intelligence by which he can understand what activities to perform and what to avoid. So if the human entity, if the human being performs punya, he gets a higher birth. If he performs pap, he gets a lower birth. However, the human being is meant not just for this, but he is actually meant for performing a karma, the third category of activity. So we have seen pap, we have seen punya, karma, vikarma. But their third category of karma is akarma, which means basically spiritual activities, all activities that are in connection with the Supreme Lord Shri Krishna, all forms of worship, chanting the name of the Lord. These things do not have any material reactions. Here you see some of our ISKCON devotees in South America. They are blissfully chanting the holy names of the Lord. See how happy they are. The founder Acharya of ISKCON, His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, single-handedly spread this mission of love of God all over the world. Within 12 years, he set up 108 temples everywhere. And then his disciples further spread. And today there are hundreds of temples all over the world. And people in different remote corners of the globe have access to this path of akarma now. So they chant the holy name of the Lord, they worship the Lord. And in this way one develops gradual detachment from the world. One develops attachment for Lord Krishna. And eventually then the destination is that one reaches the spiritual world. Akarma liberates one from this material world. But both karma and vikarma, punya and pap, bind us to this world. Sometimes people confuse punya with akarma. People think that ordinary charitable activities are spiritual activities. Giving food to the poor, helping the blind, giving free medicines to the poor. People think that this kind of activity is spiritual. But actually it is not spiritual. It is just material. It is punya. It can only give rise to better material birth. But it cannot get us out of the cycle of birth and death. However, bhakti or akarma, the process of devotion to the Lord, is completely spiritual. It frees one from bondage. So let us summarize our discussion of karma, vikarma and akarma. Can you focus it properly, please? Can you all read this? Okay, somewhat all right, not perfect, but... So you see, karma, vikarma, akarma. Karma and vikarma both are material activities. Akarma is a spiritual activity. Karma is called punya, pious acts. Vikarma is called pap or sin. Akarma is beyond pap and punya, beyond sin and piety. What are karma, what are punya activities? They are material acts prescribed or sanctioned in the scripture on the material platform. What is vikarma? Prohibited acts, acts that violate the orders of the scripture. And what are acts of akarma? Acts performed on behalf of God to please Him, for His pleasure when you perform activities like chanting the names of God, that is called akarma. So some examples have been given here. Punya is charity to the poor, digging wells, planting trees, giving medicines to the poor, helping the blind. Examples of sin: cheating, hurting others, stealing, eating meat, indulging in vices like drinking alcohol and drugs and so on. Examples of akarma are chanting the names of God, worshipping Him and so on. The reactions to karma or punya are wealth, beauty, good birth, good health, material happiness, and it also binds one to the cycle of birth and death. Reactions to sinful activity are poverty, disease, ugliness, suffering, low birth, and so on. It also binds us to the cycle of birth and death. What is the reaction to akarma? It results in attraction to the Supreme Lord. It slowly brings love for God. It brings detachment from the world around us, this material world. It brings purity, happiness. It brings liberation from the cycle of birth and death. And what is the next birth for these three categories of performers? For those who perform punya, they will take birth in a good family, either here on earth, or they will get a high birth in the heavenly planets. What is the next birth of a person who performs many sinful activities? He is punished in hell, and then he takes a birth in a lower species of life, and finally comes to the human form of life. And what is the next birth for a person who performs akarma? If he has perfected his life on the spiritual path, then he will be completely liberated from the cycle of birth and death, and he will return home, back to the kingdom of God, to Vaikuntha, to eternally associate with God, never to come back to this material world, which is dukkhalayam ashashvatam, which is full of suffering and misery. So we will stop here for a brief break. So please take your light refreshments. You can go there and take. Reflect on karma, vikarma, akarma, and come back quickly to hear about various kinds of karma, what is destiny, what is fate, and then we will conclude this very important subject. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.